Today's mailbag comes to us from Jenny. Every other Thursday, I go and clean my friend's house. She works a full-time, very intensive job. Her husband is very sick with multiple cancers. Her daughter lives with them, and she is 27 and autistic. When I met my friend, she instantly clicked with my autistic daughter. And if you know Nora, you would understand why that was amazing. She mentioned Nora is very much like her daughter. Now that I have met her daughter and spent several hours with her, it's amazing their similarities. My friend trusted me enough with her family to pay me extra to help organize her daughter's room. It took 5 hours, but we got it done. I mentioned this to my mother when she called one day. She said, "I'll pay you to come clean my closet." My parents live near Disney and always pay for our trips there. They never let me pay for anything. So I said to my mom, "I'll clean your closet if you take me to Disney again." She said, "Deal. I know that project will take hours, but also will be so worth it. My mother is one of those, throw it in here. If the door closes, you are good people." Years ago, my Nana, my mom's mom, came to visit and commented how organized it was. It's kind of funny how hard I try not to be like my mother. And I can make extra money and earn good trips to Disney. Winner, winner, chicken dinner with good people and Mickey Mouse.
Do you have an Organized 365 success story? If so, we would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at customerservice@organized365 and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organized 365.
Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. Okay, I've been talking a lot about, in the last couple of episodes, about household tasks and about the Sunday basket. I'm going to segue in this podcast into a whole new series I'm going to do about organization in each phase of life. But first, I want to really talk about phases of life. My understanding of what the phases of life are in academia, and then my pink bubble ideas about phases of life that are not in academia that I found to date. Okay, so I want you to picture a picture, and I'll put this drawing, it's really rudimentary, I'll have Katie make it pretty, into this podcast so you can see it. But I want you to imagine like an arc, like the St. Louis Arch, okay? Imagine that arch like a rainbow. And then I want you to turn it 180 degrees upside down so it almost looks like a hole, like you're at the top of a hill and you go down into a hole and then you go back up to the top of the hill. And these two arches are layered on top of each other. So if you're looking at the left-hand side, you'd have a person at the top of the hill and you'd have a person at the bottom of the hill. And the person at the bottom of the hill would then go up and down to the other side. And the person at the top of the hill would come down to the bottom and then up to the other side. It's not a fish. I don't know. I'm sure this is an actual shape of something, but I don't know what it is. So a hole and a rainbow, okay? So on the left-hand side, the people are at the top of the bottom. About 18 years in, these two drawings cross over in the middle. And then 50 years in, one is touching the bottom and one is touching the top. So the top of the St. Louis Arch is at the top and the bottom of the hole is down on the bottom. And then another 30 years out, they're going to cross over again, and then you'll end up with the same person who was at the top on the first left-hand side will be at the top on the right-hand side, and the person who was on the bottom left-hand side will be down at the bottom on the right-hand side. I don't know. It's the best I can do. It's a podcast. We're going to have a drawing of this. This image came to me quite a while ago, and I have been thinking about it for a long time, and now that I've done a little bit of study in my PhD, I can explain what my idea is, and then we get into the messy pink bubble where I don't know how to explain it. My degree was in early childhood education, and I added on a second degree in elementary education. My degree from Miami University was in family and consumer sciences. So basically, I got a home ec degree with a teaching certificate attached to it. So because of that, because I didn't start in elementary education and add on early childhood, I started in early childhood family and consumer sciences, and I added on elementary. My basic classes were in early childhood development. Like, I'm all about the 0 to 5, like 0 to 3 especially. Like, I love the itty bitties. And I was just so enamored with Erikson and Piaget and all these ways in which they would literally observe children in labs. We even had a lab school that I went to. It was like a preschool. And if you read the book, The Secret History of Home Economics, you hear about these lab schools that were created. Miami's wasn't like that, but there used to be these babies that would live at these lab schools for a year. And so psychologists were able to study live children and everything about them. Like, that's why we know so much about babies. And understanding phases of life development from birth through 18 is so well studied. I mean, there's just literature. There's just so much literature and scientific study and observations, because children then go into schools and you can study them in schools. And there's so many eyeballs on it. So there's a lot of understanding of childhood. So childhood, I am determining, and this whole childhood study is from 0 to 18. That's pretty well established. And then there's this new theory called emerging adulthood that was found in 2000 by Jeffrey Arnett. So Jeffrey Arnett proposed a new theory saying that there is this in-between time from the age of 18 to somewhere between 25 and 29, just depends. And this in-between time of life is where you're no longer a child, but you have not fully acquired or taken on the ownership of full adulthood. You're in between. And some people don't go through this at all, but in highly developed countries, Italy, United States, England, all these countries, there is a growing number of people who actually go through this phase called emerging adulthood. I was like, whoa, that makes a lot of sense. Like, I see this emerging of this adulthood. So this range can be 7 to, you know, up to the age of 30. So 7 to 12 years. So if you're thinking about this arch, the crossover where the arch and the hole crossover on the left-hand side happens at the age of 30, in my estimation. So you have your childhood years where you're coming up on the arch, and you have your emerging adulthood years, and then you cross over this arch. When these two cross together, that is when you turn 30. From 30 all the way until you're 70, that's when these two are going to cross on the other side. And on the other side, then the next 10 to 12 years, so 70 until like around 80 or 82, now we're into the pink bubble. This is not in academia anymore. This is just Lisa making things up. This is where I think we have reverse emerging adulthood. And I think this because I think that when you are 70, you have all of this experience and you have all of this lived experience, and you are reversing your emerging adulthood. Instead of, you're in an in-between stage again, not in between childhood and adulthood, but in between being an active, contributing, influential member of society to more of a childlike state where it's back to you and your family. I don't think there's a better way to see this play out than between Trump and Biden. I mean, I don't care what political party you're in. These people, these guys are too old. They're not too old in that they have so much knowledge. They have so much experience, both of them, obviously. However, they are in the in-between between all of the knowledge and experience they have given to the community and retirement. Like, it is time for younger people to be the head of government, because I'm not going to lie, I misspeak on the podcast and on Instagram all the time. I'm not saying that you're not going to misspeak. It's exhausting. President of the United States, exhausting. I don't think I could do it for 2 days straight. I just don't think I could. It is like running a marathon. You get to the point where you have in your 70s all of this knowledge, all of this experience, and yet you are so far from the people that are crossing over into adulthood at the age of 30 that you just don't have the current relevant today perspective of the multiple generations that are younger than you. And since we have political candidates from both sides that are both very old, it's not really a political statement. It's just a cognitive age statement. You're in the in-between, and you don't want to not be in adulthood anymore. You don't want to not be in active political and business life. However, there are a lot of people in adulthood who are coming behind you. And then from 80 or 82 until 100, that I think is the reverse of childhood, which is where you continue to have cognitive decline until ultimately you pass away. As I said, I do not have academic support for all of this. In the reason why I have this arch and then this whole image in my head, because you could say, Lisa, you could have done that on a line. Why do we have to be imagining this St. Louis arch in our head and the inverse of it and where these cross over? Because here's what I have observed. One of those arches, the one that is the St. Louis arch, is your capacity. So as a baby, you do not have a lot of capacity. And when you pass away, you do not have a lot of capacity. But when that arch hits that top and you're 50 years old, you have unbelievable amount of capacity in every single way. Like you have growing capacity and knowledge, and then it starts to come down. The whole is how much time you have. So you're starting at the top of the hill on the left-hand side. As a baby, you have all the time in the world. Everybody revolves around your time schedule. You are the baby. So take care of me. Thank you very much. And then when you're in your 50s, that is the least amount of time you will ever have because you have the most amount of responsibility. And then it goes back up the other side. So there is this capacity and this time arch. Remember, we're in the pink bubble. I've not found any support for this in academia. I feel like I have to give these disclaimers now because people say that because I'm getting my PhD, everything I say has to be academically related. You guys, I don't have that kind of time to read that many things. I have way too many ideas that I still want to express. So I'll just tell you when it's not supported by science. None of what I'm saying from here on out is supported by science, to my knowledge. But if it is, please email me. I would love to know. So this time and this capacity continuum has been, for me, frustrating. Because when I have time, I didn't have the knowledge and capacity to act on it. And then when I don't have the time, I have all the knowledge. You see what I'm saying? And it goes back and forth. Now, this is supported in academia. In academia, in multiple different studies, in multiple different genres, studying all kinds of things, there is this little blip which is called the dip, the middle age dip. And it is a rating of happiness. And they find that there is a rating of happiness that dips, you know, midlife. So let's say 50. I don't know the exact age because I'm not reading. So that's too many details for me. I just know that it's in a lot of places and it is a dip. So when I heard about this in the fall in my classes, I said, well, do you think that that coordinates with menopause? So if you know about this, please let me know. And my professor said she did not think so. So I went and I did a little bit of research, and I found that the age of menopause has not changed for the last 2,000 years. So for 2,000 years, the average age of menopause has been 50 years old. Now, puberty has changed. Menopause has not changed. First of all, I just find that totally interesting as a side note. Secondly, if you're going to live to be 100, 50 is right smack dab in the middle. So if you're going to have a little midlife dip in happiness, that's where it is. And then your happiness tends to go back up again. So my hypothesis in that class was that this midlife dip corresponds with menopause. And the fact that I have gone through menopause and I've watched my mom go through menopause and I see other people, I'm like, oh, what I personally observed with menopause is you kind of do what you did at 40. Like when I turned 40 and started to organize 365, I said, oh, heck no. Like I am not living the rest of my life on this hamster wheel. I'll never make it. Like if I'm going to live to be 100, I can't do the next 60 years this way. Something's got to change. If it's going to change, it's going to be me. I'm going to start a business. I can't do this anymore. I'm going to have to do something different. So I started Organize 365. 50 was different for me. It wasn't such a big change. But when I turned 50, I was not afraid of it at all. It was actually empowering, frankly. And I thought, you know, nobody's paying attention to what I'm doing. Nobody cares what I'm wearing. Nobody, like, I really could do whatever I want. It's not really changing anybody else. And so what do I want? I just started saying, like, what do I want? Like, do I want to move or do I want to stay in this house? Stay in this house. Okay. Do we want to have Joey rent or do we want to buy a condo? Buy a condo. Do I want to keep running the warehouse or do I want to make a plan to buy the next one? Buy the next one. Like, I just started going through everything that I'd already done and what I perceived I would be doing in the next 10 to 30 years. Kind of made some decisions. Like, I just made all kinds of decisions. Like, do I want to travel? Yes. How often and where? I made a plan. Like, I just kind of looked at the next 50 years and really the next 30 years. I was like, how long do I want to work? I want to work till I'm 80. If you want to have fun with a financial planner or an insurance person, when they sit down to do your estate or any of those things and they say, how long do you plan to work? Say that you're going to work until you're 80 and then watch their head explode. And they're like, we don't have actuarian tables for that. We don't have a model for that. I was like, well, I guess you're going to need to make one. They're like, but if you make this amount of money, you could retire like, I don't know, a lot sooner. I was like, don't really want to. And they're like, we don't understand. I'm like, clearly you're not listening to the podcasts and the audiobooks I listen to because of the entrepreneurs I know, Martha Stewart, Dan Sullivan, like they're 80. They're still working like, and they're totally happy. And I don't see them retiring anytime soon. My father-in-law is 82, not retiring. Like none of these people are retiring. They own their own businesses. We're weird. We're not. We love our life today. What are we retiring from? We don't understand. So I made that decision. I'm going to work till I was 80. Oh my gosh. The weight that comes off of you when you decide you're giving yourself a longer time horizon is awesome. So I'm like, great. I've got 28 years to do research. I've got 28 years to like, I don't have to do everything by the time I'm 55 so I can retire early. Zero desire to do that. So I made these decisions for myself. And now I would say I've been through whatever this midlife dip is. So I found this study, back to academia, Marcia and Josselson, 2012. And in there, this is my paraphrase, I say, they note that women in midlife seek counseling when their caring ability has reached a level of overfunctioning, leading to burnout. The resolution to burnout is to pause and care for oneself. That's what they said in the study. So then I said, ironically, when a person is in the generative phase of life and pauses to focus on their needs and desires, usually around 45 to 55, society labels this inward focus as a midlife crisis. However, this crisis is not a crisis at all. It's a natural rebalancing of energy and production in the middle of a long adult life cycle of generativity. Those are my words at the end of that in my paper. So I'm saying this because I think that one of the underlying problems in household organization and productivity and understanding of the structure and process and procedures needed in order to create an easier existence in household administration is that we do not have a model or a picture of how time and energy intersect and wax and wane throughout a person's life. And that's where the St. Louis arch and the inverse of it comes into play. A child, a baby, it's all about the baby. And then when that person becomes 50, they're doing the most work and they have the most capacity, but they have the least amount of discretionary time, and then vice versa happens. So when you're looking at organizing your household, making your household productive. I have said for many years that we have these different phases of life. And in each phase of life, we need a different amount of organization. Your household functions differently based on how many people are cohabitating with you. Now I say your kitchen functions as different kinds of restaurants throughout different times of your life because the idea of meal planning doesn't resonate with me anymore because I don't make meals at all. I use my kitchen as a short order cook diner and a convenience store. It's never a sit down family restaurant unless my husband's cooking on Sunday night. So even the concept of meal planning will probably never serve me for the rest of my life because I don't plan in meals. I plan in what proteins and vegetables am I going to have and throughout what amount of the day. Like, I think in components. I think in things I can grab and eat in the car, things I can have at work or at home. I don't think about, like I did when I was a stay-at-home mom, everyone sitting down and eating the same meal at the same time and passing their plates around the table. So there is so much more to these phases of life. And layered on top of these different phases of life, and I'm going to go through each one in subsequent podcasts, is the capacity and the time limitation or variables as it relates to that phase of life. You know, and they could be different. Because if you're in the phase of life of childhood and you're a homeschooling family, you're at home all the time. So you have time, but you're also running a school. So maybe you have less complexity. So there are varying levels of the capacity and the time that you have in each phase. But you need to take that variable into account when you actually make your plan. All right, I'm going to throw this out here because I don't know how else to tell you this, and I need help on this as well. You are now part of my school for me. So how I did this time capacity visual, which also I've not seen represented in academia. So if there's anything about time capacity over the lifespan of a human, let me know. I haven't even researched it yet. I did it 30 years till the arches cross, 50 years in the middle, and 30 years on the other end. That doesn't add up, Lisa. 40 years in the middle. 30, 40, 30. With 50 being right in the middle. There is a lot of literature about all of the different phases of childhood. They don't have it 0 to 18. It's like, I don't know, 7 different phases of life. Then there's this new emerging adulthood from 18 to 25 or 29. There are a few buckets of phases of life in adulthood. Erickson has a couple. I think Levinson has a couple. But there aren't like where everybody's like, yep, this is it, this is it, this is it. So the research practicum that I'm doing right now that's dividing how you view household in phases of life. Did I already tell you this? Now I'm wondering if I already told you this. How it's dividing in phases of life. In my research proposal, it's exploratory, so we can do things with the variables after we've collected them because this is exploratory research. Originally, I said that the age group was 18 to 29, because that's emerging adulthood, 30 to 60, because that's established adulthood, and then 61 plus or 65 plus, I can't remember, is older adulthood. But then when I ran the study through cloud research, I collected the data based on birth year so I can sort it now that I have it. But I did it based on the American census, the population of the American census. And cloud research had a category of emerging adulthood, 18 to 29. And then they had 30 to 44, 45 to 60, and 61 plus or 65 plus. I can't remember. I'm not looking at it. So I have those categories. So I said to my advisor, I said, well, wouldn't it be interesting if we sorted the data, because we're in exploratory research, to see if there are any patterns. I was like, I wonder if you did it by decade. So 18 to 29, 30 to 39, 40 to 49, 50 to 59. And she said, where's the literature for that? And then my head exploded. And I'm like, okay, qualitative, like, 40 was a pivotal year for me. 50 was a bit, I mean, I could talk to you. Are your milestone birthdays pivotal? Like, just in general, research. Milestone birthdays are a big deal. However, does literature support that? Has anybody done research on that? I have no idea. So if you know, please let me know. So I actually, by the time this airs, I will have done some of this research, but still, that's okay. Still, give me whatever you have. I will have to go look at it because I'm not allowed to sort my data by decade unless I can find support in academia to divide it that way, which leads me to another thing that I may or may not have already said before on one of these podcasts. Because I have now gone through menopause at the age of 50, and I believe I've already been through this midlife dip that they talk about, and I know now what that feels like. And I do believe, like Marcia and Jocelyn say, that I reached a level of overfunctioning and burnout, and then I had to kind of like reorient, like, okay, what am I going to do with the next 50 years? Like, it was like a level setting for me. By the time you experience menopause and the midlife dip, you're already 50. Guess what you haven't been doing for 50 years? Thinking about menopause. Once you go through it, you can't really not think about it. However, you're already doing something that you're uniquely created to do, which is not researching menopause or the midlife dip. So in order for there to be more research around that, someone who has experienced it needs to take a big segue and then spend 3 to 5 years researching this, finding academia, doing the support. You know, very few people are going to do this. That's one example. I think that that is indicative of everything related to lifespan. We know so much about childhood because children are so easily studied. They always have to be supervised. So somebody's watching them and somebody's watching them and making observations. And then it's kind of a free-for-all after that. Like by the time you're 30, it's like, all right, we'll take this study. But nobody's like watching you all the time in order to see what's happening in your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. See what I'm saying? And also, as you get older, you don't know what it's like. I don't know what it's like to be a 70-year-old because I'm not 70. I'm 50. So I could say we shouldn't have a president that's in their 70s. But when I'm in my 70s, I'm pretty sure I'm going to think that I know a lot of things and that you shouldn't take any of my power away. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be very adamant about that. So, you know, who am I to say that? Because I haven't experienced those years yet. And yet also, how are you going to do research on something that you haven't experienced yet? Once you get to those ages and you are there, then you are more not only observationally aware, but experientially aware of what it is to be somebody at 70 or 80 or 90. And you would ask different questions in different ways and maybe do your study differently based on your experiential knowledge in addition to your academic reading knowledge or your observational knowledge of that. And so for that reason, I don't see as much in developmental psychology in these older years. Now, let's just take this with like a mountain of salt, shall we? I'm like a year plus into a PhD program. I know nothing. If we know anything, we know I know zippo. So if you're like, no, actually, email me. I'm welcome to read the research. I like come into the conversation with me. I'm all for it. I'm just saying anecdotally, from what I've observed from my undergraduate education 30 years ago and my current class, only one class that I took in developmental psychology, but in also teaching with my professor who was, her whole degree was in developmental psychology and she knew a lot about developmental psychology. As soon as I talked about menopause or old age, she was like, yeah, no, we don't have much research on that. So if anybody would know, she would know. And she was like, no, we don't have much on that. And when I said, as a 50-year-old woman, you know, like there's a lot of cognitive load, there's a lot of mental load for us taking care of our parents. Her parents were very healthy. And she said, literature does not support that. And I'm like, well, let me just tell you 8 million people who will support that they are literally giving up their jobs and their livelihoods to take care of their parents. Like, I don't know what academia is saying. I'm just saying, look around. You will see that we are parenting our parents. And it is a huge financial, physical, emotional load for people in adulthood. And so I think that academia is awesome. Like, so glad I'm getting my PhD. I love it. However, also, if I have to find academic support for everything I do or want to do in the future, it's going to take forever for us to really understand how households function throughout a lifespan, let alone how to organize them. Because let me just tell you, that's just understanding how we function throughout a lifestyle. We haven't even layered on the portion of how we use our houses differently in life cycles. No academia on that. How we organize? Zippo. I mean, It's just not. There's the things that I am asking questions of, I have to go four hops away to even get into an academic conversation that's going on. So I'm going to record the next podcast in how to organize your home in different phases of life. But I wanted really first to have this conversation of, this is how I view a lifespan. I view it as this inverse arches of time and capacity. And there are these kind of golden windows where they cross over, where you have almost like an equal number of time and capacity around 30, probably around 70 is what I'm guessing. And then it starts to split again. And right there in the middle, if you're in that 45 to 55 year old age range, you've got a lot of weight and responsibility on you and probably very little discretionary time. You feel like you're being pulled a lot of different directions, that you need to be in three places at once, because you do need to be in three places at once. Again, open to feedback, open to, for sure, articles that have been written, so that I really want to step into the conversation that's already going on in academia. I don't really want to create my whole little sidecar over here that's not attached to the train. So let me know where the train is. I will do the work. I will do the research. I will be a part of it. So in this next series of podcasts, what can you expect? The things that I am looking to unpack are, in our home and each of these stages of life, number one, what is our purpose, our job in this domain? Number two, what is our capacity? Number three, how do we actually use the physical spaces in our home during this phase of life? And number four, what scaffolding or support do we need or would make this phase of life easier and less invisible? Basically, I'm trying to figure out, what is the phase of life map of a household organization? So what is, if you were to map out household organization across a whole life phase, what would that look like? And obviously, this is not academic. This has not been researched. This is not being published in any peer-reviewed journal. This is just my observations up until this point. This is where I'm starting from. This is the understanding that I have at this point in time, and then we collectively can build from there.